Hey, Unchained listeners. As you know, it's hard keeping up with the fast-paced world of crypto, so we've got just the thing for you. Subscribe to our free Unchained Daily newsletter at unchainedcrypto.substack.com. You'll get the latest crypto news and original articles from our reporters, as well as summaries of other happenings in bullet points, plus our meme of the day, all curated and written by our amazing team. It's still your no-hype resource for all things crypto, just in newsletter form. Sign up at unchainedcrypto.substack.com. Again, the URL is unchainedcrypto.substack.com.
Hi, all. As you may know, a few months ago, I started a Facebook bulletin newsletter. I'll now be opening a paid Facebook discussion group where you and other listeners of the show can discuss recent episodes, ask questions in advance, get access to special AMAs with myself and show guests, and more. Those who join now and for the next 2 weeks will get a special introductory price of $2.99 a month or $29.99 annually. Those who join from February 15th and onward will be charged the regular rate of $4.99 a month or $49.99 annually. We will open up the group on the 15th, 1 week ahead of my book launch. If you're interested in subscribing, head to laurashin.bulletin.com/subscribe, which will be in the show notes of this episode. Again, the link is laurashin.bulletin.com/subscribe. Hope to see you in the discussion group. I also have another announcement. I have a new author website. It's at laurashin.com. Please go check it out. I think it's gorgeous and it captures well everything I've been up to, from my book to the podcast to speaking and press. You can also find out all the contact information for me, depending on whether you're interested in pitching Unchained, having me speak or do press, or want to sponsor the show. Again, the URL is laurashin.com, laurashin.com. Enjoy. As you know, my book, The Cryptopians, comes out February 22nd. I wanted to share a blurb that Michael Casey, chief content officer at CoinDesk and co-author of The Age of Cryptocurrency, wrote about it. Michael said, "Laura Shin's compelling blow-by-blow account of the remarkable birth and growth of Ethereum shows that its spectacular wealth generation was not without struggle. By Shin's telling, the story of Ethereum is a grand human drama. Its lesson is that for all the talk of decentralized, code-based virtual machines, a successful crypto project's biggest challenge is that it must survive its user community's internecine conflicts and rise above the egos of its brilliant but humanly flawed founders." If that intrigues you, then pre-order The Cryptopians, Idealism, Greed, Lies, and the Making of the First Big Cryptocurrency Craze today at bit.ly/cryptopians. That's bit.ly/CryptoPians. And the book comes out February 22nd. And again, you can pre-order it at bit.ly/cryptopians. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Unchained, your no-hype resource for all things crypto. I'm your host, Laura Shin, a journalist with over 2 decades of experience. I started covering crypto 6 years ago, and as a senior editor at Forbes, was the first mainstream media reporter to cover cryptocurrency full-time. This is the February 4th, 2022 episode of Unchained. With the Crypto.com app, you can buy, earn, and spend crypto in one place. Download and get $25 with the code Laura. Link in the description. Today's guests are Morgan Harper, a Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate in Ohio, and Srina Karani, a Democratic congressional candidate for California's 41st District. Welcome, Morgan and Srina.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for having me, Laura.
There's a perception that the Democrats are more anti-crypto while the Republicans are more pro-crypto. And although I know there are plenty of Democrats who are also pro-crypto and there are also some prominent Republicans who are anti, I do think for the most part, the more vocal supporters at least tend to be Republicans and the more vocal critics tend to be Democrats. And there's obviously a whole new crop of Democratic candidates who seem to be pro-crypto, such as you two. But before we actually dive into all those issues, why don't each of you give us your backgrounds, what you were doing before you decided to run for Congress, why you decided to run, and then why you're pro Web3. And Morgan, why don't we start with you?
Sure. Well, yeah, no, thank you again for bringing us together. It's exciting to be here with both of you and talk about crypto. And, you know, just, yeah, a little bit about me. I'm from Columbus, Ohio, originally born and raised. I had some early life experiences that just made me aware of the fact that we don't really have a level playing field in terms of people's ability to access opportunity. And that put me on a mission to do something about it. So I figured out, oh, public policy is driving a lot of decision making. Got to figure that out. Got a master's in it. Became a lawyer, and then eventually worked in Washington at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau after the financial and foreclosure crisis. And that's when I really just started to wake up to the reality that in many ways, we don't have a policy problem. We have a politician problem. And we need to have more people that understand what's going on the ground and really trying to use these positions to get things done, to run and win if we're going to see what I believe should be the vision of our core American value, American dream, is that everybody gets that access to opportunity. So that's why I'm running for the United States Senate. And yeah, look forward to more of the discussion.
And then, and just add at the end why you're pro Web3.
Well, you know, what's been interesting, and I first learned about, you know, things like crypto, Bitcoin, when I was at the CFPB. And, you know, I'm all about trying to make sure that we have a level playing field and that we have people being able to access opportunity. And what we've seen over the past 20 years, especially, is the economy has not met places like Ohio with that opportunity. There's been a lot of capital accumulation on the coast. And a lot of places in the Midwest are not faring as well. And people don't feel like they have access to the traditional financial system as well to be able to build wealth. And so, you know, in conversations with people about crypto, blockchain technology, Web3, you know, hearing that this might be something that gets us closer to level the playing field and from people in Ohio who are excited about it. So that's why I want to learn more about it as well.
And Srina, what's your pre-politics background, and why did you decide to run, and why are you pro Web3?
Yeah, of course. I love all of these questions. So I am running for Congress, as you mentioned, in California's 41st congressional district. And I grew up here, and my parents worked 7 days a week. I grew up in their small business. And I realized, especially now, that that level of hustle still doesn't support families, especially here and across America. And so, Morgan, I love what you're mentioning around the wealth gap, around generational inequalities, and the fact that we need to be able to create new pathways and new systems to be able to allow people to get there. I'm an engineer. I went to UC Riverside, my hometown's UC, and got my degree in mechanical engineering and dove straight into sustainability. Acknowledging the climate crisis and the fact that we need to do something now, I started building companies related to food, energy, and water, and have most recently been building a financial technology company to be able to create access to capital. And the fact that most entrepreneurs, most American people don't have access to capital, don't have the ability to buy in to our financial institutions. Well, I don't want to say the way that they used to, because they didn't really before either. But especially now, we're seeing a lot of these problems exacerbated across a fold when we're talking about being able to buy a home. When we talk about the fact that who actually is getting mortgages, who's able to be able to have the capital to do the things that they need to do. And we're seeing increased disparities across the board. So I think started working in crypto, actually, with our the last company that I was building, Republic, which also has a revenue sharing token. So actually launched a token last year to be able to create more opportunities for people to buy in, and realize that, you know, when we talk about Web3, I love the definition of Web3, right? We talk about Web1, where it's read-only, right? You come to the internet to consume. Web2, where you're reading and writing, and, you know, people are creating content. And Web3, where we now have the opportunity to own our assets, right? And rather than the centralization of power that we've traditionally seen with technology, we now have the opportunity to decentralize that power and actually bring profit back to the people.
So Morgan, as you mentioned, you used to work at the CFPB, and the founding of that can be credited to Senator Elizabeth Warren, who is probably one of the more vocal anti-crypto voices. Can you talk a little bit more about your experience there and how that informs your views on Web3 and why you think that that could address some of the problems that you've seen through your experience?
Yeah, the CFPB was a real pivotal experience for me, just as a professional, as a public policy, hope to be leader. And yeah, you know, so some of what I learned there, as I mentioned in the introduction, you know, is the first place where I ever heard anybody talk about crypto. And that was because we were founded as an agency that was supposed to be also monitoring new developments in financial markets that consumers might be interacting with. And we had a team that focused on that. And it was that team that started coming back, you know, from California and talking about people being interested in this space and starting, different companies or investments and things like that. And so I wasn't really responsible for that as part of my portfolio. Of course, you know, in the 2012, 2013, we had much bigger issues in some ways that we were facing with still dealing with the outcomes from the financial crisis and all of that. But I noted it and I was like, this is interesting. And, you know, the other thing that I would say about the CFPB that made it unique is that it was founded to be a data-driven agency that, you know, there's this perception that the federal government, and I will say, with all honesty, it's a perception that I held before working there of the federal government's just always a bit behind the eight ball. It's a lot of bureaucracy. It's not cutting edge, but that we wanted to be an agency that was directly, you know, engaging with people, getting information, actually asking and collecting more information by having things like a consumer complaint database, hearing from people directly about what was going on in different markets that they were participating in, and then coming to the table with people who are in industry, consumer advocacy groups, all the experts to then be best informed to make good policy and develop appropriate regulations that both understand the opportunity of different products, but then are protecting people from the risks. And, you know, that has informed everything about how I think about public policy. And it's interesting. I've been surprised, especially during this campaign, about how scared people are of disagreeing. And, you know, I put some of that at the feet of big tech, which is, you know, one of, I think, our main problems right now as a society, just in terms of breeding this polarization and people, everybody getting in their rabbit hole and not having to really interact with people who have different opinions than they do. But that's something that we need leaders to be aggressively working against and bringing us together to talk. Because we can't have people going to Congress to develop public policy, to be leaders in a place like the Senate or the House who aren't willing to engage with people who have different opinions than they do. And especially on this topic, I mean, you know, I can't speak for any other elected official, but just, you know, to me, there are very few things that we could just be hard no on, you know, especially when they're somewhat newer. We need to be in a posture of gathering information and doing what's best for the people that we represent. And, you know, again, my orienting principle is if there are people in the state of Ohio that are interested in this, that are finding that it's creating pathways to wealth that they hadn't experienced before, then I need to be representing them in a good way and getting more information and supporting them. And then, yes, also understanding how we mitigate any risk. But at a minimum, you know, be in a posture of openness and understanding as we think about, you know, different policies and regulations.
And one thing that I noted was you wrote up a tweet storm about how you felt the real issues when it came to consumer financial protection really had to do with existing financial institutions in the traditional financial system, as opposed to scams and frauds in crypto. I mean, although, of course, you acknowledge that those do exist in crypto. Can you also talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I'd be curious that Shreena has this experience as well. Whenever we're talking about something new, people like to pretend as if what's come before is flawless, right? And without any weakness. And that's what I wanted to emphasize in that tweet thread, is that we have some real issues within the existing financial system that a lot of people have just acted as if it's normal course, that of course we're going to charge people fees because they don't have, you know, enough money in their account, even though it's perfectly possible for the bank to know when they are approaching the end of their balances and to warn them of that and then not have them do an additional transaction. That technology exists. But instead, we let banks ignore that information and then continue to charge people things like overdraft fees that are just predatory and really targeting people who don't have a lot of money in the first place and extracting more income and wealth from them. And so I want to always shine a light on the truth is one of my goals as a person. And again, as a leader, and to not let those types of arguments shut down any discussion of the future, because it's a very typical rhetorical tactic I've found. And especially with the existing financial system, and especially with, you know, a lot of, I would say, Black people, different communities of color who have been left out of the traditional financial system. Honesty is the only way to get people to take you seriously at this point, because people know. I mean, it hasn't the traditional financial system hasn't been serving them in the same way. And there's more awareness of that than ever. And so you can't just, again, have this position of hard no when we have people who know exactly what the weaknesses are and are looking for better opportunities.
And Shrina, your campaign is interesting because, and I believe it's the first congressional campaign that sold NFTs for fundraising. And when you launched them, you wrote up a post about how you felt that they helped solve some problems with political fundraising. Can you explain what you mean?
Yeah, of course. Well, I think the reason why we did the NFT drop had a couple of sort of motivations behind it. I think first and foremost, Morgan, I love that you're really highlighting the fact that education is a big problem here, that we have to look at the past and say, hey, we've had some real problems in the way that our traditional institutions have existed. And so if we're looking at why inequality exists in the first place, we have to look at how things have been done before. And so I think step one is educating the American population. We talk about educating the elected officials, and we need to make sure that we're bridging that gap to the rest of the community, right? And so I think part one is education, right? How do we make sure that we can get more people on board to even understand what this new pathway even means and what it looks like? And then when we talk about political fundraising, I'm sure Morgan can attest to this, but it is not fun, right? When you sign up to be a candidate, you're doing it because you want to change things, because you want to get policy done. And instead, you're being told that you have to do 30 plus hours of fundraising on the phone, talking to donors, right? And trying to get money because, and this is something I was just looking up last week, but female candidates on average actually lag behind by about $500,000 in terms of their male counterparts and what they're able to raise. And so especially as a female candidate, especially as a woman of color, you're really trying to make do with a lot less compared to your competitors and to the other people that are in the field. And so you have to get creative. And I think NFTs were a really interesting way. For one, it sparked a lot of conversation around what is an NFT? What is crypto? A lot of people in the area are like, oh yeah, there's a new stadium, right? Didn't the new, you know, stadium get renamed crypto.com? Oh yeah, I've heard of that. I think I know what that is. And actually being able to facilitate a conversation around, well, I thought, you know, you're a pro climate, a strong, bold climate agenda candidate. How can you be supporting crypto? How can you be supporting something that has such a massive environmental impact? And it's like, well, we did it on Solana. Our footprint of an entire NFT drop was a couple of dozen Google searches was the equivalent, right? And so acknowledging that, yes, this is an industry that has had a footprint, but that's because we're still relying on non-renewable sources. And so if we're able to have a more renewable energy mix, first of all, we'd address this problem, you know, at its core. And a lot of these technologies are taking on, if you look at Ethereum in 2022, they've committed to changing to a proof of stake technology, right? And so we're seeing changes in the industry to actually commit to these things. So I think being able to further the discussion around this has been an incredible opportunity for us with the NFT drop. And of course, helped us, you know, save quite a few hours on the phones to help with our fundraising for end of quarter.
That's great. So in a moment, we'll talk about the effect of adopting crypto on your campaigns. But first, a quick word from the sponsors who make this show possible.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Join over 10 million people using crypto.com, the easiest place to buy, earn, and spend over 150 cryptocurrencies. Spend your crypto anywhere using the crypto.com Visa card. Get up to 8% cash back instantly, plus 100% rebates for your Netflix, Spotify, and Amazon Prime subscriptions. Download the crypto.com app now and get $25 with the code Laura. Link in the description. Back to my conversation with Morgan and Shrina. Before we went to the commercial break, Morgan, it looked like you wanted to add on the discussion I was having with Shrina about fundraising.
Yeah. Well, because Shrina really hit the nail on the head. I mean, the fundraising aspect of running for office is one of the primary reasons why more regular people don't run. And I think that it's not a surprise that there is a pretty big overlap between people who are attracted to more independent types of candidates. I am a Democrat, proud to run as a Democrat, but I am doing this in a very different way than most Democrats who have run for office, especially in the state of Ohio, in that I'm not taking corporate PAC money. We're individually funded, and it's that grassroots model. And it gets at this idea of we have had a generation of deferring to traditional power structures, to parties that then tell us what we should be believing and who is best positioned to represent us. And we're in this era where I've said it a couple of times, but the jig is up to an extent. And we don't know if these people have actually had our best interests at heart. And we want to have people that can be firmly on the side of doing what's right, decentralized power, having more freedom over our lives, and then also elected officials that recognize that's our goal, not in a, in my opinion, a false far right way, but in a true ownership and having the ability to really build your life in a way, support your family in a way that isn't just deferring to these traditional power structures. So to me, that's one of the key parts of having political leadership that is free to do what's right. And then also people who are in this space, I think, have this idea that, yeah, some of these traditional financial structures as well haven't really served a broad swath of the population getting to that place of economic freedom, and want to both, you know, support candidates who get that, but then also because that's the vision that we have for our lives is, you know, being able to have more ownership and control.
And so since adopting a pro-crypto stance, what effect have you seen that have on your campaigns? And then extrapolating from that, what effect do you think crypto in general will have on the midterms?
I can start, and it gets at one of the things that Trina actually had mentioned in terms of environmental impacts. I mean, that is one, you know, especially as someone who I identify addressing the climate crisis and recognizing the opportunity in addressing the climate crisis from an economic perspective as one of my top priorities, and investing in renewable energy in a place like Ohio that is positioned to be a manufacturing leader, that we make sure that renewable energy is a core part of that as we rebuild our manufacturing sector. For some people, you know, it can seem inconsistent to, you know, be willing to talk about crypto blockchain technology and also have that position as a strong climate advocate. And so, you know, it was interesting for me to hear how, you know, Shrita's been talking about that. And you know, and making sure that people have full information about existing environmental or energy usage from some of the technologies that already are in place. And then, yes, of course, doing whatever we can as we explore the opportunities with blockchain and crypto to minimize any negative environmental impact. I think it's possible based on the conversations that I'm having with people, but that has certainly been a common question that I've gotten. But, you know, also, though, I've had a lot of people in Ohio who have reached out once they saw that I was talking about crypto and blockchain to be supportive and talking about how they've had the experience of, you know, being able to get a little bit of a financial cushion for the first time in their lives. And a lot of women who have reached out saying, you know, I haven't heard a lot of women talking about crypto. It feels like it's been a very, you know, male dominated space, and that you're out there is really encouraging to see. And then people who don't feel like they fit into any political home or category that are reaching out to say, you know, happy to see someone that, you know, they would never follow a Democrat otherwise, but this is interesting to hear you talking about this, and that, you know, might be willing to support. So on a number of fronts, very, you know, interesting reactions.
And Shrina, what about you?
Yeah, I would say a lot of my experiences very much echo Morgan's, right? In terms of being able to reach new people, people who often see the world of politics in black and white, Democrat or Republican. And I really like what Morgan said about the fact that we are here to put the issues first, right? If our job is to serve the American people, then we need to make sure that we're actually representing the interests of the American people. And a good chunk of Americans own crypto. Right. And so this is not something we can put by the wayside. This is not something that we can ignore. And we actually have a responsibility to address, to make sure that people have guidance to actually work within this industry in a legal way, right? People are looking for tax reporting frameworks. They want to make sure that they're actually following the rules, but there are not very clear rules to follow. And so I think we have the opportunity to continue to educate the American population. We have the opportunity, especially as a congressional candidate, we were talking about the fact that California has a lot of congressional districts and the nation has a lot of members of Congress and a lot of congressional candidates. And so finding ways to really separate yourself from the pack, I think, is also a way that we can continue to sort of lead the conversation in terms of what innovation looks like, what it means to have elected officials who are open and willing to work with technology and with new pathways to actually create more access for more people. So I think there's a lot we can do here when it comes to education, when it comes to sort of setting ourselves apart as an American people in terms of how we're approaching crypto and being able to create pathways for more people to actually participate.
So at the moment, the administration is definitely considering a number of different measures for regulating crypto, you know, when it comes to things like stable coins or, you know, tax implications. I mean, there's just any number of issues that they're looking at. If you were to be elected to Congress, what regulations would you want to put in place?
Maybe I'll start in the Nancy, because it actually, I wanted to also go back to just the role that this will play in the midterms. And I think the administration talking about that connects to that question as well, where, you know, we do run the risk, I would say, those of us on the progressive side of things, Democrats, as there's this perception out there that we're the party of no, you know, and whether rightly or wrongly, and that, you know, we're not on the side of supporting, you know, entrepreneurs or businesses, small businesses, even medium-sized businesses to an extent. And so, you know, I do think it's important that we have a posture, again, of being open-minded and talking to people who are building in this space. And this is, you know, just another example of that. And so I think it's good that, you know, the administration is saying and projecting that they're going to put out an executive order and gather more information. It sounds like, you know, it's going to be gathering more information from different federal agencies that might touch this space and figure out what the opportunities and the risks are as we move towards appropriate policy solutions. And, you know, just based on a lot of the conversations I've had, it sounds like that's what a lot of people in this space are craving. And it's very consistent with what I would hear at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. People want to be able to know what regulations are, to then have more predictability as they're building companies and innovating in the space. And so, you know, what the specifics come down to, I'm, you know, still kind of figuring that out. But my sense is people are actually looking and welcome, you know, having a real discussion about substantive regulations and what they might look like.
Yeah, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, I think it really does come down to education, right? I think the first step, which is why I'm also excited about this executive order, is that we do need to gather information and we do need to look to the different agencies, but also the industry to take a look at, you know, what do we need? What guidance are people looking for? And I think that comes down to a few things. And I think as the industry continues to evolve, and as we continue to talk to folks in the space, I'm sure we'll be able to build out the list of things that we need to fully address. But I think some of the basics include tax reporting frameworks, right? We need to make sure that exchanges actually understand what they need to do to abide by federal regulation, because there really isn't federal regulation. And so how do we make sure that exchanges understand how to do that? How do we look at KYC, AML, and CFT frameworks in a way that actually protects people's privacy, but also abides once again by federal regulation and make sure that it's consistent with the basic values of crypto when it comes to transparency and openness, but also privacy, right? I think there is an opportunity to have safe harbors for new types of organizational structures. We have the rise of DAOs. We have this ability for people to sort of organize in a way that doesn't necessarily have precedence. And so what does that look like from a regulatory perspective? And so I think ultimately, what it comes down to, once again, is education, making sure we understand where we are now as an industry and what needs to happen moving forward, but also creating that space for innovation to continue and make sure that we're not over-regulating and actually stifling that innovation, but allowing it to happen within a sort of safer capacity.
And so Morgan kind of addressed this earlier in the conversation, even though I didn't ask it directly, but I did want to ask you, Srina. You know, as we mentioned, some of the more prominent Democrats, such as Elizabeth Warren, who is very influential in the Democratic Party. Like, she's criticized Bitcoin for having a high Gini coefficient, meaning that the wealth is quite concentrated in the hands of a few. She said things like DeFi is the most dangerous part of the crypto world. And you just mentioned like KYC AML. And I know the administration is kind of maybe looking at trying to apply that to what are called self-hosted wallets, which are just, you know, not wallets on an exchange. But I just wondered, like, you know, what would your message be to some of these more prominent Democrats who, you know, have this more negative view about crypto?
I think, once again, it starts with education, right? We need to make sure that we're actually listening to industry and looking at some of the facts, right? As we talk about KYC, AML, and CFT, where is some of this, you know, more illicit and nefarious activity actually happening? And the majority of it's still happening, for one, in a cash-based economy. And it's secondly happening in traditional institutions, right? And so the percentage of crypto that actually has some of this activity is incredibly small. And so I think we have to look at the data. We have to, once again, look to industry experts and actually understand what's happening in the space, and sort of set the playing field to a certain extent to be able to address that. We still don't know what's going to happen in the future. We are at the very beginning of this new type of technology, and we need to address the fact that we're at the beginning, and there are a multitude of pathways that this could go. And how do we set regulatory frameworks that, once again, allow the innovation to continue while doing it in a way that isn't exacerbating inequality, that is actually allowing new pathways for more people to enter the space, and make sure that we're protecting privacy, we're allowing people to custody their own assets in a way that is safe and understood and can be regulated, but also allows people to control their assets in a way that traditional institutions just don't allow.
Great. And so what would each of you like the crypto community to know about you?
That's a great question. Well, you know, so coming back to one of the points that you all were just talking about, because I do think this is really important, that is another topic that people come to me, you know, since I've been tweeting and engaging in different podcasts and all of that, is this is just a replication of the problems with the existing financial system. This is not decentralizing anything. This is replicating the centralization of power. That is one of the reasons why we have income and wealth inequality in the US at such an alarming rate. And that we have to get to the bottom of. And so that's one of the things that I'm always asking people about is, you know, is this truly open, right? And are we, you know, what are the transaction fees looking like? Are we replicating existing problems? So I think that is important to talk about. The other thing that I would say, you know, in terms of what I want people to know about me, but then also just something for the crypto community to think about as they're engaging with different political figures is, you know, just a couple of days ago here in Columbus, I had a debate with one of the Republicans who's in the primary for this Senate seat, Josh Mandel, who is someone who is very active in this space and I believe talking and engaging with a lot of people. I think there's a real risk whenever anyone is considering themselves a one-issue voter, that you need to be very careful about what are the other things that people stand for. And even if it's not, it doesn't feel like it's very important to you, if there's somebody that maybe you like on this issue, but is also questioning separation of church and state, for example, is that really going to be furthering the vision that we all have of economic freedom, of decentralized power, of the type of country that we want to be living in and rights being respected? And so, you know, I believe it's important that the community exercises an appropriate level of discretion in terms of who they're supporting and what else they stand for to make sure that we're all shooting for the same thing. And I believe that we're best served by a country where we're respecting people's rights, but then also, yes, jointly working together to try to decentralize power and achieve more economic freedom.
Srina?
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that, Morgan. I have actually a very similar perspective when it comes down to, as you're assessing the political landscape and as we're building out the crypto industry, a lot of it comes down to the basic values. What are the things that the crypto community values? That a lot of the words I've heard used are openness, are transparency, are grassroots, are ways that we can create a new system that actually allows more people to participate, more people to actually own the system that we're building together, right? How can we turn users into owners, right? It's a conversation that we have a lot. And as we go back to those basic values, looking at the political landscape in terms of which candidates, which policies are actually reflecting those values that you care about. And I love what Morgan mentioned around not being a single issue voter, because there can be discrepancies and there are so many nuances across all of the issues. And so going back to the basic values of this new system, of Web3, of this new industry and this new world that everyone is trying to build together now, and making sure that that's reflected in the people, in the elected officials that are going to be representing you and are going to be carrying your voice on a congressional level. And so I really hope that people sort of take the time to actually assess, you know, what is it that's important to you? Who is representing those values? And how are we making sure that we're building a future that is more sustainable, that is more equitable, and that is safe for people to participate in, that you can have your privacy, that you can make sure that you and yours and future generations are going to be able to continue to live the life that you would want them to live.
Great. Well, it's been so much fun talking with both of you. Where can people learn more about each of you and your work?
So I'm at morganharper.org is our website, and then MH4OH, so Morgan Harper, number 4, Ohio, on all social platforms. And please reach out. Really want to be accessible and connect with as many people as possible. So DM me, email, whatever.
Yeah, and for me, it's just my first name, lastname.com. So srinakurani.com, and on all social channels at srinakurani/srinakurani. Just got on TikTok, still trying to figure that out.
You got lucky. I couldn't get Morgan Harper. I was late to the late to the punch. So,
but would also welcome any and all sort of insights, any advice, any questions, any thoughts, any ideas. You can reach me on email as well at srina@srinakurani.com. And I would really, really appreciate the support. I think for new candidates that are trying to change the way that government has been done before and are trying to champion issues that not a lot of folks understand, we need support. And so would really, really appreciate your time, your energy, and any way that you can support our campaigns.
Great. All right. Well, thank you both so much for coming on Unchained.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, Laura.
Don't forget, next up is the weekly news recap. Thanks for tuning in to this week's news recap. The second largest hack in DeFi history. Wormhole was exploited on Wednesday for 120,000 wrapped ETH. According to Twitter user Tony Intern, the attacker was able to steal almost all of the Wormhole wrapped ETH, which accounts for 20% of the $1.6 billion in wrapped ETH locked into Solana. With Ethereum hovering at around $2,600, the exploit is worth over $300 million and ranks as the second largest hack in DeFi history, data from Wrecked shows. Wormhole is a cross-chain bridge, meaning Wormhole locks assets into a contract on one chain and mints a wrapped version of the asset onto another chain. According to Paradigm researcher Sam CZ Sun, the attacker spoofed a Guardian signature and minted 120,000 ETH on Solana, without having to bridge ETH in the first place. A guardian is a node that signs off on transactions between chains. By creating a fraudulent guardian signature, the attacker was able to mint wrapped ETH on Solana out of thin air and move the fake wrapped ETH to Ethereum in exchange for real ETH. Optimism's Kelvin Fichter also came to the same conclusion. The Wormhole team announced that the vulnerability was patched at 7:41 p.m. on Wednesday night. By Thursday morning, the bridge was live. Jump Crypto replaced the 120,000 ETH on Wormhole's ETH contract so that wrapped ETH was once again fully backed on Solana. In the hours after the attack occurred, it appears the Wormhole team reached out to the hacker's address to offer a $10 million white hat bounty in exchange for returning the funds. As of press time, there is no update on this front. NFT volume in January skyrocketed, despite a choppy crypto market. Crypto started 2022 as a $2.2 trillion asset class, according to data from CoinMarketCap. 31 days later, The market sat at $1.7 trillion, a 22% decline. Tokens that ended last year on a hot streak were particularly hit hard by the market correction, with 2021 darlings Terra and Solana down more than 40% on the month. Blue chips Bitcoin and Ether were also hit hard in January, dropping roughly 20% and 25% respectively. Despite the drawdown, non-fungible tokens had a record month. In January, NFT marketplace volume hit an all-time high of $6.75 billion, doubling last August's previous record of $3.31 billion, data from The Block shows. OpenSea led the way, facilitating 60% of January's NFT volume. However, LooksRare, an NFT marketplace that debuted on January 10th via a vampire attack on OpenSea, saw over $2 billion in volume on its platform. Solana NFTs also had a big month, surpassing $1 billion in historical volume, and Magic Eden, an NFT marketplace, did a record $300 million plus in January. High NFT trading volume coincided with tons of mainstream adoption. Twitter implemented NFTs into profile pictures, and Reddit is testing a similar feature. YouTube and Meta are both rumored to be working on NFT products. In addition, celebrity adoption of NFTs was rampant, with Justin Bieber and Gwyneth Paltrow joining the Bored Ape Yacht Club community. U.S. stakers could be in for a tax reprieve. Last year, Joshua and Jessica Jarrett sued the IRS for a refund, claiming that they erroneously paid taxes on crypto staking rewards as if it were income. The lawsuit argues that staking income should not be treated as income until it is sold. This week, the IRS offered the Jarretts their refund without explaining the reasoning behind the refund, which would also mean that the IRS wouldn't be setting a precedent. However, Joshua said that they are not taking the refund, explaining, "I refused the offer because I know that until my case receives an official ruling, I have no certainty they won't try to tax me again." In essence, Josh sued the IRS for clarity on taxation of new tokens created through staking. The IRS tried to pay him off to drop the suit. "He turned down the money to continue the case and seek binding precedent for us all," wrote the Blockchain Association's Jake Chervinsky on Twitter. According to CoinTracker's Shehan Chandrasekara, if decided in favor of the Jarretts, the case would only set a precedent for proof-of-stake staking income and would not cover interest, mining, or airdrop income. Relatedly, Coinbase has teamed up with TurboTax to allow users to convert state and federal tax refunds directly to crypto via the exchange. Fidelity thinks Bitcoin is superior money. Fidelity Digital Assets published a report this week titled "Bitcoin First," arguing that Bitcoin is fundamentally different from other digital assets and would most likely be the winning cryptocurrency in a multi-chain or winner-take-all future. Quote, "Bitcoin's first technological breakthrough was not as a superior payment technology, but as a superior form of money. As a monetary good, Bitcoin is unique. Therefore, not only do we believe investors should consider Bitcoin first in order to understand digital assets, but that Bitcoin should be considered first and separate from all other digital assets that have come after it." Additionally, this week, during a conversation at MicroStrategy's Bitcoin for Corporations conference, Christine Sandler, head of sales and marketing at Fidelity Digital Assets, revealed that the company started mining cryptocurrency and accumulating Bitcoin in 2014. Diem never launched, but Silvergate Coin might. According to a statement on Monday, the Diem Association will begin the process of winding down over the next few weeks after a tumultuous 3 years. The announcement officially retires Diem, formerly Libra, Facebook's stablecoin project. Disclosure, I write a Facebook bulletin newsletter. In Diem Group's statement, CEO Stuart Levy revealed that Diem's demise was influenced by regulatory scrutiny. "In the United States, a senior regulator informed us, the Diem Association, that Diem was the best designed stablecoin project the U.S. government had seen." Levy added that it became clear from our dialogue with federal regulators that the project could not move ahead. As a result, the best path forward was to sell the Diem Group's assets, as we have done today to Silvergate, said Levy. Silvergate Bank is purchasing the remains of Diem for $182 million. The digital asset-friendly bank partnered with the Meta project over a year ago to create a stablecoin pegged to USD in a last-ditch effort to revive the project. With its $182 million purchase, the bank said it will use Diem's existing tech to enable a Silvergate-issued stablecoin, which it hopes to do so in 2022. India welcomes crypto with a 30% tax. India plans to tax income earned from transacting with virtual digital assets at a rate of 30%. There has been a phenomenal increase in transactions in virtual digital assets, said India's finance minister, Nirmala Sitharaman. The magnitude and frequency of these transactions have made it imperative to provide for a specific tax regime. Interestingly, neither crypto or NFTs were directly mentioned in the speech. Instead, the term virtual digital asset was used. The budget also provided a roadmap for the launch of a digital rupee. According to Sitharam, a digital rupee will be issued using blockchain and other technologies to be issued by the Reserve Bank of India starting 2022 to 2023. This will give a big boost to the economy. On a related note, Thailand also announced crypto tax news, stating that it is abandoning plans to impose a 15% tax on crypto. NFT backlash shuts down Worms before it even began. Despite the success of NFTs in January, many traditional companies entering the space have been facing intense criticism from environmentally conscious fans. For example, this week, video game publisher Team17 reneged on its plans to launch an NFT collection based on the Worms video game franchise, which has sold over 75 million games in its lifetime. Team17 is today announcing an end to the MetaWorms NFT project. We have listened to our Teamsters, development partners, and our games communities, and the concerns they've expressed and have therefore taken the decision to step back from the NFT space, tweeted the company. Team17's statement came after its partner, AgroCrab, condemned NFTs. We believe NFTs cannot be environmentally friendly or useful, and really are just an overall fucking grift, wrote the firm before threatening to end its relationship with Team17 if its NFT plans weren't canceled. Other companies, such as Discord and Ubisoft, have received similarly vociferous backlash from their fan bases regarding NFT and crypto integrations. GameStop is a crypto company now. On Thursday, GameStop unveiled a partnership with the Ethereum Layer 2 solution Immutable X to launch its own NFT marketplace. Disclosure, Immutable is a former sponsor of my show. The two companies have set up a $100 million grant to support developers using the marketplace as part of the deal. In related news, gaming company Ubisoft has agreed to enter the Hedera Hashgraph ecosystem and operate a node while exploring the blockchain's distributed ledger technology. This comes shortly after Ubisoft launched a Tezos-powered NFT platform for its games. Time for fun bits. Yes, Dune Analytics raised exactly $69,420,000. Another week, another series of huge fundraisers. FTX Trading Limited, the Sam Bankman-Fried-led firm, announced a $400 million Series C raise on Monday, valuing the company at $32 billion. In the past 6 months, FTX, the third-ranked crypto exchange by CoinMarketCap, has brought in $1.8 billion in funding and has seen its valuation increase 75%. FTX US recently announced a monster raise of its own at a valuation of $8 billion. Phantom, the Solana-based crypto wallet, closed a $109 million Series B fundraising round that valued the firm at $1.2 billion. Paradigm led the round with crypto powerhouses A16Z, Variant Fund, Jump Capital, and DeFi Alliance, among others, participating. The raise coincides with Phantom's release of its iOS app. The firm plans to double its headcount in the near future. This week, the data visualization firm Dune Analytics also announced new funding led by Coatue, bringing in a mimetic $69,420,000 and garnering a new valuation of $1 billion. The data firm plans to use the fund to build a community application programming interface, or API, that will allow users to compare data across chains in a single query. Additionally, the Financial Times reports that Yuga Labs, the developers behind Bored Ape Yacht Club, are looking to raise at a $5 billion valuation from A16Z. Thanks so much for joining us today. To learn more about Morgan and Trina, check out the show notes for this episode. Unchained is produced by me, Laura Shin, with help from Anthony Yoon, Daniel Ness, Mark Murdoch, Shashank, and CLK Transcription. Thanks for listening.